Today, what we're going to cover is the spending plan register, which I think is one of the most powerful tools to create consciousness around where our money is going. And if you use it the way I talk about, regardless of what your income is, you can live within it within 90 days, and I guarantee that. So that's the spending register. And then this is a little bit off track from the standpoint of being purely financial, but we're going to go over a script for generating business through referrals. And it's one of the most powerful ways of asking for referrals from the standpoint that it's been tested over thousands and thousands of calls, and it's so simple and easy to use. And so since, you know, most of the people on this call are in business in one way or another, I think this would be a very valuable addition to our conversation. So let me review where we've been. In module one, I said you'd be provided with the tools to make powerful new decisions, the tools you can make choices about who will be getting your money and determine if you're getting the level of pleasure that you're paying for. And I like using the term tools. You know, tools are the forms and the concepts that will allow you to create financial independence. And if you don't like the word tools, you can use something else, I don't know, like keys. But if you wanted to prepare a gourmet meal or any kind of meal, you'd need cooking tools. Someone give me an example of what is another word for cooking tools.
Utensils?
Yeah, utensils, exactly. What are some examples of utensils?
Spatulas.
Yeah. Spoon, spatula, pot, pan. Yeah, exactly. The point being, you know, you can't make a meal without some tools or utensils. So if you wanted to repair a car, what kind of tools might you use?
Wrenches, pliers.
Yeah, exactly. So the point being, you wouldn't expect to build a house with your bare hands, would you? So the forms and the concepts that we're going over in the course are the tools that allow you to build your financial house and attain financial freedom. A house that's going to shelter you from fear, anxiety, or concerns, regardless of the economic conditions around you. And this is so important because the economy could be going up or down or sideways. It makes no difference. When you have your finances organized appropriately and powerfully, it doesn't matter what the economy is doing. So if you remember, in module one, we covered thinking from the details or the big picture. We covered the three areas we all operate from: our thoughts, feelings, or values, and how feelings run us most of the time. But tapping into our values can overcome the feelings that get in the way of our financial success. And when we listen to familiar information, we're either making statements or we're asking questions. And I've also heard this described as the yes but disease. Let me hear from any one of you what yes might disease might sound like. Oh, this is the part where we participate.
The yes but disease?
Yeah, yeah. Like, yes, but I don't think that'll work for me. Yes, but I don't think I have the time. Yes, but that works for this kind of business owner, but I'm in this business.
Right.
What might that look like?
I'd like to travel, you don't have enough money.
Yeah, fine. Yes, but I don't have enough money. Okay, fine. The point of what I'm getting at is we are all afflicted with that. We hear something, we can hear a great idea, we can hear a wonderful concept, we can hear about a way to ask for referrals, and we can say, yes, but that won't work for me. Again, that backs up to what I was talking about in an earlier module, where we either ask questions about how to utilize something or we just make a statement like, yes, but that won't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want you to be able to ask a question. Even if it's familiar information, even if you know how to do a budget, you might ask a question like, gee, I wonder if I can use that in this area. I wonder if I make an adjustment, if it will apply to me if I do this. So that's what I'm requesting, is you ask questions when you hear familiar information and don't back up to the yes, but disease. So in module 2, we did a word exercise to measure your relationship to either poverty or prosperity thinking. And we discussed our belief systems about money based on the messages that we may have received when we were young. We did another exercise for couples to understand each other's money values. You wrote a 5-year financial goal from the future. And finally, we covered the 6 areas of influence from the book Change Anything to build a support structure that you can use to guarantee your success in the achievement of your goals. And I got feedback on, I've got emails that showed the 6 areas of influence several of you have put together. And I want to acknowledge all of you for doing the work, for creating the 6 areas, for writing down the 5-year goal, for you know, giving me the feedback to know you're working on this stuff. I recommend you continue to reread your 5-year goal to be sure it's a fit for you and your values. And I suggested creating milestones from what you're going to do in 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, and so on your goal. In module 3, we covered the debt elimination and the memory jogger forms, and 2 of the powerful financial tools used by the wealthy, which was the balance sheet and the income and expense form. These are the tools the wealthiest people in the world use, and I hope you saw you don't need any financial background to complete these forms. These forms measure how you're winning the financial game of life, to see if you're on track for your goals or to determine if you're getting what you paid for. And they work for the wealthy, and they'll work for you. Can any of you tell me what insights were seen from completing either of these forms?
For me, I thought it was, this is Mandy talking, by the way.
Hi, Kirsten. You're the only woman on the call right now, so Kirsten, I think it's safe to assume when I hear a female voice, it's going to be you. Go ahead.
No, is this, are you listening to me? Can you guys hear me? This is actually Mandy.
Oh, hi, Mandy. I'm sorry.
Myself because I came in a few minutes late.
I'm here.
Okay.
It's Sandy, too.
Oh, did I hear someone say, oh, and Sandy, you're on the call too?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so Mandy, you were going to tell me what insights you got from working on the forms.
Oh, one thing I noticed is it looked like when I was looking, are you talking about the forms we're talking about today or last week?
No, well, either one, the balance sheet or what we're going to work on today.
What we're going to work on today, what I noticed was that it started out it was counting down and displaying how much money you had at any given time. I mean, I know that's probably not too obvious of a thing for someone who's a little older to do, because back in the day you used to clear checkbooks. Like, you used to manage checkbooks this way. But for someone younger, we didn't. Like, I'm 31 and I didn't do too many checkbooks, you know, because everything was digital.
Exactly.
So it's a better assessment of exactly where you are.
Yeah, it's so funny because when you said that, I realized, yes, it's based on the concept of a checkbook, and people of your generation, I speak to some of my tenants, and the only check they write is the one for the rent.
Right.
Otherwise, yeah. I mean, everything else is done online. The bills are paid online, and, you know, they're using PayPal or whatever, and no one's using checks. So I can talk about that concept, and people don't even know what I'm talking about. One of the tenants doesn't even have a register. And the reason I said, I'm noticing you're not writing down this rent check in your register. He said, Yeah, I know. It's the only check I write.
Yeah.
There is no tracking. There is no need, you know. So thank you, Mandy. Yeah, the insight is people aren't doing it because that's gone out of style. Anyone else want to comment on either the cash flow form or the balance sheet or what we're going to work on today?
Hey, Rennie, I've got a question.
Yeah, who's this?
Larry, this is Larry. I'm just.
Hi, Larry.
I have your book. I downloaded the book, Wealth Without Any Income, and I printed off. I'm just looking. I printed off the balance sheet. Is the cash flow in that same place chapter in the book? I didn't see it.
There's the example in the chapter on using the balance sheet, and then the full balance sheet is at the in the appendix section at the back of the book.
Okay,
great. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So, as a reminder, we spent the first two modules dealing with the emotional components and our attitudes about money. And the point of doing the emotional stuff first, like how we listen, whether we're operating from our feelings or our values, the belief systems we have, setting our five-year financial goal, is to create the desire to put these tools into practice. So today we're going to cover the spending plan register. And I say it's the most powerful way to ask, and we're going to cover the most powerful way to ask for referrals for your business. After creating the content for this module, I realized I was trying to pack 2 pounds of food into a 1 pound can. It just wasn't fitting in the time frame. So the points I said I would cover in the conference call invitation, I'm having to split up. On our next call, we're going to cover the pay yourself first concept and a spend versus keep allocation for your money. So the spending plan register is what we're going to cover today, and it's used in 3 ways, but primarily I'll talk about just 2. First, it creates awareness on where your money is going so you can have a reality check on your spending. As an example, in the program Overeaters Anonymous, they require people to write down every time they eat anything, whether it's a candy bar, a snack, a meal, whatever. And many years ago, I wanted to have a better diet, and someone suggested I write down my eating. And I thought my eating was relatively normal. But what I discovered from actually writing it down was my eating was a complete aberration. I might have no breakfast, no lunch, and only dinner on one day. And the next day, I might have snacks all day long and no dinner. Until I wrote it down, I was not able to be conscious to the reality of the situation. And that's what the spending register, that's one of the things the spending register creates. The second way it's used is to spend money in alignment with your goals. So the register is the last and one of the most powerful tools to create financial freedom. It's flexible. And if you use it as I suggest, you can live within your income in 90 days, just like I said. I guarantee it. You can see how close you are to any savings or spending goal as well. This is the third way. In 5 to 10 seconds, without the aid of a computer or a phone app or anything else. If you obviously have an app on your phone or QuickBooks or whatever, you're welcome to use that. And we're going to discuss the awareness that shows up from tracking the results of your spending. And I want to do this each week until the end of the course. And it doesn't matter if you use this tool that I emailed over the weekend or if you have an app on your phone. It's the concept that's most important. So as I was working on this module, it felt like I was going to do too much of the talking with too little interaction. But I hope you can hang in with me on the concept. Using the spending register is how one attorney was able to find $12,000 that he needed to pay his income taxes. If you already have a process to get the same information, then you might want to add this concept of measuring your pleasure to what you're doing now. If you're not already doing that, most of what I'll cover here is directly from the Wealth on Any Income book. Now, one day I was watching TV and I ran across a program on the life of John D. Rockefeller. This is the man who established a Standard Oil Company, and at one time he was the richest man in the world. The TV program showed the ledger he used when he was 11 years of age. In it, he tracked every penny that came into and out of his life, where it came from, and where he spent it. These are the habits the wealthiest people in the world use, and you can use them to transform your life. It's not about penny pitching. It's about consciously choosing where you spend your money, measuring the level of pleasure it provides, and spending in alignment with the results you want to produce in your life. Your spending will be based on your values, not the values of your neighbors, coworkers, or politicians. It lets you know in 5 to 10 seconds how much money you'll have available to spend in any category you choose to track without using a computer. In addition, you have the opportunity to measure your pleasure. You'll be able to see if you're receiving a level of pleasure you're paying for based on questions you can ask as you make a purchase. Now, last week you either guessed or you used the financial records of your expenses to determine if you have a positive or negative cash flow on the income and expense form. Now it's time to verify those figures, and that's what the spending register will do. In addition to the version I emailed, in the back of the book, I provide 2 pages in the appendix of the spending register, and you can tear out and copy them from the back of the book. So there are 2 ways to use this form, and I've provided examples. Again, also refer to the spending plan memory jogger for assistance in setting up the categories for yourself. When you fill out the spending plan checkbook register for the first time, use it to find out where your money is going. You pick from any of the categories for the ones where the money leaks out during the month. It might be meals out, grocery, clothing, transportation expenses, entertainment, whatever. You don't need to use the register to write down your rent or mortgage payment. After all, once you've paid this, it doesn't show up again for another month. In the example that I emailed, I used the categories meals out and groceries to illustrate the primary 2 ways the register is used. A 3rd way is to show how well you're saving up for something. If you're saving up for something like a $10,000 vacation, you put the goal at the top of the category, and as you set aside money toward it, you subtract from the goal to see how much you have left to save. So let's look at the examples that I provided. First, you'll notice for meals out, on January 1st, I spent $10 for lunch, and it was cash. Now, when I was doing this, I didn't write down when I was spending cash. If I wrote a check, if I used a credit card, then I put Then I put the check number or the credit card in that far left-hand column. But if it was cash, I didn't write it down. I didn't write down the word cash. That's what I'm trying to say. Next column, you see you have the room for the notes to show you who you had lunch with, which is also valuable at tax time. When I'm having a business meal, it can be noted here. In my register, I actually kept 2 separate columns. One was for personal meals and one was for business meals. You can structure your own register to gather any data you want. It's so simple to keep the records because it was right with my checkbook that I always carried. Again, that's the past. I don't even have a checkbook anymore. My assistant does everything on QuickBooks. A client of mine used this he'd actually wrap his cash in it like a money clip because he used more cash and at the time I used more checks. Or if you use a debit card, place that in the register. I didn't have to wait until I got home to load the information and some program. And I don't have to fumble around in a three-ring binder or iPhone or BlackBerry or Franklin Plan or anything else. It's right where the money came from. So if you choose to use a program on a smartphone, that's fine. Just make a notation with every expenditure right then and there. So if I spend $10 having lunch with Bill, I write it in the column. Let's say the next day I use a credit card at lunch and I charge $22 on Visa. So I put a circle around the $22 because this identifies money I spent that wasn't cash. And at any time I can go through my register, and by adding up all the circled items, I will know how much will show up on my credit card statement before it even arrives in the mail. So for the Smith business lunch, I add the $22 to the $10 I spent previously. How much have I spent so far? $32, right?
Right.
So the shaded areas for the additional notes and the subtotal. The next day I go out to dinner and I charge $26 on American Express. Again, I circle a number. So what's my total now in meals out? $58, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone caught the error that's in the book, but it says $56 in the text. I mean, it's $58 in the register and it says $56 in the text of the book. And so it's an edit that got missed. Anyway, on the 4th, I write a check for I write check number 123 for dinner with my wife. I spend $22. You can see I spent a total of $80 in meals out.
Right.
It's just that simple. I write it down, I add it up, and it takes no more than 5 to 10 seconds after each expenditure. Now I want to prove that's how little time it takes to create information from which you can make decisions. So, is it correct that all of you have a piece of paper in front of you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what I want you to do is now hold your pen over the piece of paper and get ready to write something down. And I'll say start, and you start writing. Okay? Ready? Write down the word start. Write down the word cash, then lunch, then $15. Stop. That should have taken 6 seconds. Okay? Start writing again. You ready?
Yep.
Okay? Write down cash, dinner, $25. Add that to the $15, and you should have $40. Stop. That should have taken about 10 seconds. Any questions that this only takes 5 to 10 seconds after you spend money?
No.
Okay.
I have a question, though.
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Okay, so today I take a colleague to lunch and it's a business expense. Tomorrow I
yes.
take my wife to lunch and it's a personal expense. Can I interleave those or do I have to have separate pieces of paper for each one?
For me, it was easier to have two separate columns for personal meals versus business meals. You can have them all in the same thing. And then, you know, at the end, you just separate them out. But again, I think it's easier just to have it in two separate columns.
Right, sure, okay. So we
okay.
can create another column for a business.
Correct.
Yeah.
Sounds like someone else. Go ahead. Go ahead. Who's going to ask?
I'll ask first, I guess. This is Mandy, and I see how this is really valuable for someone who's single, but I don't know how this would give me any accurate information when I'm married and all of our accounts, everything is joint, and we want to keep it joint because I wasn't happy with my parents had divided finances, and I didn't really like that. And my husband's not willing to do this tracking. And even if he was, I'm not sure how we'd get an accurate picture without having to, like, cross-compare. And I'm not sure how to do this when you're working in a team environment, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Well, in your household, who's the one who handles the bills or pays the expenses primarily?
My husband does.
Okay, so he pays the bills.
Yes.
All right. So the information that you gather will be for you primarily. And the way to know how it's working for the two of you jointly will be for you to review what the bills are that were paid. He doesn't have to track his expenses, because if he's paying the bills, the information is there. All you have to do is review it. Now, do the two of you have conversations about major expenditures or goal setting and things of that nature?
Yes.
Okay. And where does the information come from to make those decisions?
He kind of tracks it on his own spreadsheet and in his own head, and just kind of, he likes to do it on a month-by-month basis in his own head. And and I can get this information historically, and I can track it historically, and I was telling you that over email, and I think I have a good system for doing that, but like, in real time, I haven't been able to make it work. And I've tried something like this before, and I'm not sure how to make this work. And maybe it's not, maybe I don't make this work. Maybe I just need to look at it historically. What do you think?
I'm going to say, based on how I know you and the relationship that you have, tracking it historically is going to work out just fine. You're not in the situation where you're running negative balances. You're setting aside money on a regular basis and building up your cash reserves for investments. I'm going to say doing it on a historical basis will work for you. That probably
okay.
will not work for 90% of the people who handle money, but it does work for 10%, and I'd say you're among that 10%.
Okay, that makes you really relieved. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mandy. All right, so I want to touch on the concept now of measuring your pleasure, which comes from the book Your Money or Your Life. They presented two key concepts. The first is that money is converted into life energy you've used up. And you can convert any income level into an hourly rate. And you use that hourly rate to measure the cost of items you purchase, as an example. A common work week has 40 hours, which would be 2,000 hours a year with 2 weeks off for vacation. If your annual income is $60,000 and you reduce it by the income taxes you pay and the other deductions, you then add up the additional hours you spend related to your work, as an example. You're driving to and from work. You're bringing some work home. You're working at home. You're going out and buying or clothing, or you're taking your work clothes to the cleaners or whatever. When you add all those hours up, you get the total of what's really being spent in your life related to your work. So if I create an example, I say, okay, I spend another 250 hours a year related to my work, so it's 2,250 hours for the year, not 2,000. And at 60,000 per year, well, at 2,000 hours, it's $30 an hour. But after taxes and after the additional time, I'm down to $22.60 per hour. Now I have a number I can use to measure the value of my purchases. So in this example, if I'm trading each hour of my life energy for $22.60, the next step is to use the concept of asking questions. You use the hourly rate of life energy given up to measure your pleasure, to see if you're getting enough pleasure for the money you're spending. As an example, if repairing the car for $900, it's not $900. It's giving up 40 hours of my life to repair the car. Now, I ask questions like, did I receive the level of pleasure based on the life energy I gave up? Was it worth 40 hours of my life for this car repair? Is this expense in alignment with my values? Another question, would I spend money in this way if I didn't have to work for a living? These are the kind of questions you can ask. And I also suggest you ask these questions for items you don't track, like rent, mortgage, or car payments. Because based on your answers, you can put a rating at the bottom of the various expense categories. So as an example, if my answer is positively strong to some question I'm asking, you put a plus sign at the bottom of the spending plan column or next to the payment in your checkbook. If the amount you spent was fine at its current level, just put okay. If it was unsatisfactory or you'd like to see that amount decrease, put a minus sign. You can measure a whole category or you can measure item by item. It's your choice. Now, who's the one who decides if something was worth the purchase price?
No, we do.
Exactly. It's you. It's not me. It's not your neighbor. It's not someone else. Now, one of the things that I discovered when I did this was I enjoy eating out. I want to spend more money eating out. I didn't enjoy spending money at the grocery store. I wanted to spend less at the grocery store. I wanted to spend more eating out, and that was the choice I made. And I can go through my reasoning, you know, which I did in one of our other modules, but the point being, I spend money in alignment with what brings me pleasure, and eating out brings me pleasure. That's where I choose to spend more money. Now that you've discovered where you're spending your money by writing it down, you're ready for the second and primary way this tool is used. This is shown in the groceries column. Here I decided I only need or I choose to spend $300 in groceries. And I arrived at this figure based on finding out what I'd usually spent on groceries from the past. So I use the system described in the previous paragraph. Now you'll notice where it shows last month balance on the spending register, there's a negative $25. This means in the previous month, instead of spending the $300 I planned, I spent $325. So what I do is subtract $25 from that $300 I plan to spend. And this month, I'm only going to spend $275. So this is how I guarantee you can live within in your income in 90 days if you use the tool as described. And there's another way I could have handled that $25 shortage. If there was money left over in another category, like entertainment or meals out, I could reduce the amount I plan to spend there and transfer some of the money to the groceries column, or vice versa. So, you know, I don't think I need to go over this. You could see at Vons I spent $25, I subtracted from the $275, I have $250 left to spend, and so on. Here's how this tool works. If I've got one third of the money left, but I'm halfway through the month, I have to make different decisions. I have information right there, standing in the grocery store, that I need to make some changes. Again, you'll see an example in the text. You'll see a blank register in the appendix of the book. The point is, if these habits benefit the wealthiest people in the world as a concept, you think they could be a benefit to you too? And the answer is yes. So here are some guidelines when it comes to spending or borrowing money. If you're excited about buying something expensive and you determine what that is, you know, for one person it could be an $80 pair of jeans, for someone else, it's a $300 pair of jeans. It could be a new car, a bicycle, an addition to a hobby, whatever. Don't make a decision that day. Wait a day or two for small purchases. If it's a large purchase, wait a week or two. If you're stressed or in fear, you can't make a good decision. Like if you're behind in your mortgage, your rent payment, car payment, if a stock has declined due to a market crash, whatever. In those situations, don't sell an asset when you're influenced by fear, scarcity, or lack. Before selling, speak to an expert. Speak to a CPA, an attorney, a neutral investment advisor. Speak to your mate. Get input from at least two people, and three is preferred. This will also take the time that allows you to cool down from the fear or the insecurity. All right, what questions or concerns do you have up to this point about the spending register or any of the forms we've covered so far?
Well, I have, go ahead.
Oh, I just have one question. When you brought up, like, car repairs, and you...
Sandy, is that you?
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Car repairs and all those kind of horrible things you have to take care of and you don't want to, and they're like $600. You don't
want...
And it kind of makes you more sick than spending money that you shouldn't have, even though you still get sick. You did it. So it's really, you have to overcome those emotions that you have no choice on the car repairs. And so you feel like if you're going to spend money on those horrible items that are necessary, you want to have a reward, like, you know, a Nutribullet, which is, lets you get it on sale. Do you know what I mean? I convince myself.
Yeah, well, yes and no. It depends on what that reward is. And I'll give you an example that's kind of far-fetched. But let's say someone is in a job that they can't stand. So their reward for that every weekend is to get blind drunk. Okay? So what I'm getting at is a situation of you can create a reward that's damaging just because you ended up doing something you don't enjoy or spent money where you didn't want to spend it. So the reward actually has to be something that takes you in a positive direction, and that's what you want to be sure of. The other way to overcome that is something we're going to talk about in 2 weeks, and that's the keep and the spend portion of how you pay yourself first. Meaning, I have an account. As an example, I don't like paying income taxes. To me, it just makes me sick. Just like if, you know, you're talking about making a car repair, paying for a car repair. So what I have is a separate account that money goes into to pay the taxes. The money goes in there. When it comes to paying the taxes, it comes out of there. So emotionally, I have already given up that money once I put it in the account. So when I spend it on the taxes, it's not as disgusting as what just happened to me, where I forgot this year to set that money aside, and we had to sell off some investments because we got a $60,000 tax bill shock. Now, I got to tell you, that made me sick. We literally had to sell off investments that were doing very well so I could give the government $60,000 because I hadn't planned this year on it. So, you know, the way to overcome it, yes, is a reward. It has to be appropriate. And the second way is to set up an account to handle those things, because I guarantee they will happen. The car will break down. The car will need tires. The car will need service, or the car will need new brakes. And based on history, that money can be set aside. So when it shows up, it doesn't make you as sick. Make sense?
Yeah. As
all right. Okay. So now let's talk about building a business. And this applies to everyone on the call. And Sandy, it also applies to you as well.
Thank you.
So now I realize the next area. Yes, Kim.
I'm sorry, but I had a question I wanted to get resolved as well, if I could.
Go ahead.
When you're doing these registers by category, so I'm just wondering why you can't interleave. Because if I go out today, I may spend money at the grocery store. I may have lunch out. I may get something with regard to my sporting interests, yoga or bicycling or something like that, and I might get some something to fix something around the house. So I've got like four different categories right there. So am I carrying like a pad? In each of those categories, I have...
No, you're carrying the spending plan register, and at the top of each column is that category. So you have one register that can track as many as 18 different items, 18 different categories.
I'm not seeing how you do that on these forms.
Oh, okay. On the examples that I emailed, if you look at the blank spending plan register that I emailed or the one that's in the back of the book in the appendix section, you'll see there's three columns per page. It looks like a checkbook register and has three category columns per page. So one register can track 18 different categories, but I think that's far more than anyone would need.
How do you get 18 different categories out of three columns?
Because it's like the checkbook register, where instead of it going from the first column on the left all the way through to the end of the register, the page you're looking at is for three categories. The next page is for another three categories. The next page is for another three categories.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm going to be carrying, if I have six or nine different areas that I spend money on regularly, I'm going to be carrying those several pages with me. Wherever.
Yes, but it's all going to be in one register. And it'll make more sense after you have it in your hands.
Okay.
All right. Anyone else have a question?
Oh, I have a
great
question.
Oh, okay. Who's that?
It's Kathy. If I spend more than I make and my with my artwork, and I keep a log of that, but how do I turn that into the BOE? You know what I mean? I never even claim it, so that it doesn't. I don't get audited because I spend much more than I make, and it doesn't make.
Okay. Yeah, that, Sandy, you and I can have a separate conversation about that, and I'd like to do that with you. And for now, here's one of the things that I want to talk about, and that's building the business so that you can generate more income, so you're not losing money on it, so it's not a hobby, but it actually generates money for you. Okay? So this is the referral script to build a business. And like I said, I'm not necessarily a fit for the financial stuff we've been talking about, but it's one of the most effective and powerful methods for asking for referrals. And it doesn't matter if you're just starting out in business or you've been in business for 40 years. But first, let me ask anyone on the call how you would ask for a referral to grow your business. Larry, I haven't heard from you yet, so if you were to ask for a referral, how would you do it? Larry, are you still on the call?
Huh.
I guess not.
Okay. Well, basically,
okay, go ahead, Ken.
Well, yeah, this is Ken. Basically, when I do business with anyone, I just let them know if they know anyone else who is interested in buying or selling a home, I'd appreciate them referring them to me.
Okay, that's close. Thank you. And that's typical of the standard approach for asking for a referral. it's not as powerful as what I'm going to go over. Kirsten, I mean, do you have a way of asking for referrals?
Yeah, I ask if my team knows women who are shopping at specific grocery stores or are having specific complaints about something and go about it that way.
This is great. Okay.
This is Blair. Hey, Rudy, can you hear me again? I got cut off.
Oh, yeah, now I can hear you. Okay.
I think my cell phone dropped the call. Sorry about that.
Not a problem. Okay. So, Larry, how would you ask for a referral?
I just say, you know, when I'm working with somebody that I generate most of my business comes from referrals from people like you who tell about my service to other people. And is there anybody that you would know that I might be able to help at this time? Maybe.
Okay.
Wrong.
So, all right. That's pretty close. So, here is what I want to say is, well, let me just describe it. This is something I've used for decades, and it works superbly. And I discovered it about 30 years ago after it was tested over dozens of other scripts used by thousands of calls by telephone, by professional telephone marketers. It's so short and so simple, it's amazing. And it produced 3 times more referrals than any other script that was tested. So I'm going to give it to you word for word, and I'd like you to write it down exactly. Exactly as I read it to you. And it starts with the phrase, I'm growing my business and I need your help. So let me have all of you write that down. I'm growing my business and I need your help. Now, if someone is looking for their very first client, they opened their doors this morning, would it be accurate to say they are growing their business?
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
If they've been in business for 40 years and they have a huge company that they've grown, could it still be an accurate thing to say that they're growing their business?
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what stage someone is in their business, that's an accurate statement. And what's the, now, if I were to say to any of you on the call right now, I'm growing my business and I need your help, what kind of impression would that give you, and what kind of feeling would you get?
I feel kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? I feel empowered. I feel like you put your trust in me to help you.
Exactly. Thank you. So it doesn't matter, you know, what stage it's at. I'm making someone else feel empowered. You're not asking for their support. You're not asking for their partnership, their guidance, their influence. The word you're using is help, which establishes a situation where the person you're asking is superior to you. They have something you don't have, and they can help you. So when someone asks for your help, it makes you feel good. Now, there's one more sentence we add to get exactly what we're looking for. When I learned this script, I was selling financial services and life insurance. Now, let me ask you this. If I said, I'm growing my business and I need your help, and then I asked, who do you know who needs life insurance? What do you think the answer would be?
Everyone.
Probably nobody. I don't know.
Exactly. Nobody. It's very similar to asking, who do you know who needs my services? Or who do you know who wants to buy a new home? Those are describing the end result. And what you need to do is describe who you're looking for. So the next sentence starts with, who do you know who, but ends with a description of the prospect you're looking to meet. So write down the word, who do you, write down the sentence, the phrase, who do you know who, and then we'll describe the person you're looking for as a referral. Again, when I started in the insurance business, I was taught to make cold calls, and that lasted about 9 months before I was burnt out. So when I discovered this, everything turned around. In my insurance example, I would ask, who do you know who has a profitable business with about 5 to 10 employees? Or who do you know who just bought a new home or started a new business? Or who do you know who would be a key person in the success of a small business? Or who do you know that you would guess is worth more than $5 million? Or who do you know who drives a luxury automobile? So, Ken, Larry, Kirsten, Mandy, Sandy, if I asked you, who do you know who drives a luxury automobile, would any of you be able to give me an answer?
Yeah.
Because I've described the kind of person who needs life insurance. So Ken, as an example, instead of asking, if someone might need my services, refer them to, if you ask, who do you know who has a second home? Maybe they want to sell it. Maybe they want to buy another home for rental. Or you could ask, who do you know that appears is growing out of their home, like they just had another child? Or who do you know whose children have left the home and now that home is too big and maybe they're going to sell it? I mean, I actually had someone who I've gone to elementary school with who used to say, who do you know whose mate has died recently? Because he specialized in selling the home of people where one spouse has died. Actually, he would also go through the obituary column and make cold calls to people he read about in the obituary column. That was one of the ways he got his business. I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable for me, but the point is, he described the kind of person who would likely be selling a home and often buying another home that they were maybe downsizing to. And he actually handled that transaction for me. I knew someone whose husband had just passed away. She sold a large home. He handled it. He sold her a smaller home that she moved into. So, Larry, for you, how would you describe someone that would fit your services?
Well, I'm just thinking because I'm really been working on I'm a reverse mortgage specialist now, even though I've done conventional lending forever. So now I've been working on the reverse side of this, and I'm just thinking you got to be 62 years old and older. So you got to be 62 and again might be looking to on a fixed income. Maybe getting rid of your mortgage would be a huge advantage.
Okay, so simple question would be, because you can qualify whether the person is over 62 as a fit or not, the question could be, who do you know who's over age 62 and owns their own home?
There you go. Yeah, that's great.
Do you describe the person who needs your services? You don't ask the other person to figure it out.
Okay, gotcha. That's good.
Okay. Sandy, as an example, you could say, commission. Sandy, do you do any work on commission?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Okay. Do you do any commissioned artwork?
Good.
You could? Okay. So the question you could ask is, who do you know who's looking to improve their environment? Or who do you know has a family they're proud of?
Who has a what?
A family that they are proud of.
If I did portraits, you mean?
Yeah. It may not look like, you know, the traditional kind of portrait, but it could be something that they fall in love with based on the kind of work you do. Uh-huh. But you see how this is a way of growing a business.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kirsten, how would this work for you? How would you describe the person that could support you in growing your business?
They're complaining about back problems.
A lot of people complain about that. Yeah, that's the thing people are vocal about.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Is everybody kind of clear on how to describe the person they're looking for?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So great work, everyone. So on our November 11 call, we're going to cover the concept of pay yourself first, which shouldn't be new, especially if you've read my book. And again, it's going to be an interactive call. I need your participation.
Okay.
I'm also going to present a very simple structure to handle emergency expenses without creating a financial disaster or using credit cards. You know, and we're going to talk about what. Say that again.
I said that would be great.
Yeah. We're going to talk about what money to spend and what money to keep forever, because there's two different places to have that. So we're going to skim the surface on the types of investments where you can earn 8 to 10 times more than what the banks are paying. Now, between today and our next call, so I'd like to have you track your spending, and then we can discuss the insights you gained over the next 2 weeks on our next call. You know, track the things like meals out, entertainment, parking, auto expenses, fuel, repairs, clothing for you, family members, office supplies, outside services, whatever. Again, you don't need to track one-time payments like an auto lease or rent. And finally, I would like you to each call 3 current clients before our next call and use the referral script.
Oh, great.
And I'd like you to report the results to me on our Facebook page or send me an email. And I'd ask you to, you know, please remember, we do have a Facebook group to check in with one another, make commitments, allow someone else to hold you accountable or ask questions, ask for support, whatever. Now, thank you all for your participation, because that's what makes this work. Have a great 2 weeks until we speak next, and I look forward to talking to you then. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, Rennie.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.